The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Drop, and I'm your host, Katie Drop. Well, before we get started, I'm about to be releasing my next music video for the single Victim Culture. I'm going to be dropping the promo video tomorrow. You can check that out on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KatieTrop, or go to katietrop.net. It'll be posted up there tomorrow night, so look out for it. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with the Trop 10 MLB Power Rankings for this week. Starting off with number one. They've been number one for a few weeks now. Don't really think anybody's going to be able to top them, at least for the time being, but that would be the New York Yankees. Currently, their record is 49-17, best record in the league. They're about to hit 50. They're well ahead of everybody right now. I mean, in second place record-wise is the Mets at 44 wins, and the Yankees have 49. So they did just lose yesterday. But they're 9-1 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Toronto Blue Jays and the Tampa Bay Rays, and they actually took 2 of 3 from Toronto and swept the Rays. So it was a good week for the Yankees. Aaron Judge continues to dominate. He still leads the league in home runs. He's at 25 right now. Anthony Rizzo, he had a great week. He had a couple of game-winning hits and just was knocking them out of the park. Gleyber Torres, he's really stepped it up now. He's last season was pretty mediocre season for him, and it kind of rose some questions about whether he was actually going to continue to be with the Yankees or not, if they were going to end up trading him. And they stuck with him, and you know, he kind of started off the season a little bit slow, but dude has really turned it on, especially the last month or so. And this past week, he was a huge reason why their offense was so great. I mean, the Yankees' offense continues to dominate. They're hitting home runs like no other, but also their starting pitching and their bullpen. It continues to amaze. You know, Jameson Taillon, he's having a great season, and then Nestor Cortez, he's still having a great season, and the Yankees, number one, still dominating the league. Then at number two, I've got the New York Mets, overall record of 44-24, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Florida Marlins and the Milwaukee Brewers. And speaking of home run leaders, Pete Alonso, he leads the NL with home runs, with 19 home runs, but he leads the league in RBIs with 64 RBIs. So while Aaron Judge continues to dominate, so does Pete Alonso. And then you got Francisco Lindor. He had another spectacular week. And the Mets, they're pitching just, even though they keep taking hits, because they did lose Trevor McGill, their rookie, who's had a solid season so far. The rest of the pitching staff still continues to step it up. You know, you had Bassett, he had a good outing this week. And it's looking like Max Scherzer is going to come back from injury this week as well. And the Mets, they've been playing probably the most consistent baseball. Both the New York teams have been playing very consistent baseball all season long. And Mets continuing to dominate. At number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings have the Atlanta Braves, overall record of 38-29, 8-2 in their last 10 games. Chicago did break their 14 game winning streak last week, and Chicago broke their own losing streak by taking 2 out of 3 from the Braves. And the Braves also played the Washington Nationals earlier in the week. But this week, man, it was just really dominated. Their pitcher, Kyle Wright, he had a great outing. Duvall, he's had a great week. Austin Riley's had a great week. I mean, other than the injury to Ozzie Albies, the Braves have been rocking and rolling, and they're playing some great baseball right now. And look out for the Braves. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Houston Astros, overall record of 41-25. This past week, Their last 10 games, they've gone 5-5, so it's been kind of an up-and-down week for them. This past week, they played the Chicago White Sox and the Texas Rangers. Once again, the offense is just every week, it seems that somebody new is the reason why they're scoring so many runs. And this week, it was Dubon. He scored a bunch of runs this week. And then you had Kyle Tucker. He had a great week. And then even though Justin Verlander finally had a bad game, he still ended up passing CC Sabathia on the all-time strikeouts list, and he's now 16th on the all-time strikeouts list. So even though he had a bad outing, he still was able to break some records along the way. Then at number 5 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have my San Francisco Giants, overall record of 37-28. They really moved up just because their last 10 games, they're 7-3. They did play some chump squad teams this week. They played the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Kansas City Royals, so two of the worst teams in the league. But hey, wins are wins, and that's who you got to get going against are these shit squads, so you can get ready because they are playing the Braves this week. So they better step up their game. But, Alex Cobb, he actually had a great outing this week. And also Brandon Crawford, the shortstop, he played in his 1,502nd game for the San Francisco Giants, and that's actually the fourth most all-time for a Giant. So that just goes to show the dude, we drafted him, and he's been a solid, solid baseball player his entire career. So shout-out to Brandon Crawford on the achievement. Then at number 6 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall record of 38-30. Their last 10 games, they're 5-5, and they are coming off of a huge losing streak from a couple weeks ago. But they did get back on track against the Cincinnati Reds. They swept them, so they're on a 3-game winning streak currently. They also played the New York Mets last week, and they played them pretty well. Hunter Renfro, he came back from injury, and he's getting back into it. And the Brewers pitching is just one of the best in the league. And they continue to dominate with the pitching, but also on the defensive side of things as well. Andrew McCutchen, he made some big plays this week. And the Brewers, while they had a little slump there for a couple weeks, they are now back up in my top 10 MLB power rankings. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the St. Louis Cardinals. Overall record of 38-30. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Boston Red Sox and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Paul Goldschmidt, he is still one of the best hitters in the league. He hasn't slowed down at all. He's been the leader of the pack for the Cardinals in their offense. And also Nolan Arenado, he had a really good week this week. Actually, in one of their games this week, they ended up scoring 6 runs in the 6th innings, which was just crazy offensively. So the Cardinals, they're a team I don't think a lot of people are talking about. But they are really playing some great baseball right now. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Boston Red Sox. Overall record of 36-31, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the St. Louis Cardinals and the Oakland A's. Nick Pivetta, their starting pitcher, he started the season off really slow and looking like he wasn't looking good at all. That's for damn sure. But all of a sudden, this past month, he's really turned it on, and he had 10 strikeouts in a game earlier this week. And then Trevor Story, he's also continuing to have a hot bat, and he had a really good week as well for the Red Sox. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, a team that has yet to make my top 10, but now has finally cracked it this week. That would be the Cleveland Guardians. They are 34-28 right now, and they just have had a good 2 weeks, really. Their last 10 games, they're 8-2. This past week, they played the Dodgers and the Colorado Rockies, and they pretty much owned both of them, and that says a lot. They actually took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers, who are really reeling right now. They not only lost Walker Buehler to injury last week, but then they just had to put Mookie Betts on the injured list. And so the Dodgers, they are reeling, whereas the Guardians are in the opposite direction right now. Their starting pitching is looking really good. Shane Bieber, he had a solid outing this week. Ramirez, man, he is just having one hell of an MVP type season. Currently, his batting average is a 305. He's got 16 home runs and 62 RBIs, which is only second to Pete Alonso in RBIs. Ramirez, man, he is just raking it in, and he's just on fucking fire for the Guardians. And then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings at the San Diego Padres, overall record of 41-27. This past week, they played against the Colorado Rockies, who kicked their ass. And funny stat is that the Padres actually have lost 10 games straight in Colorado. So they need to get their shit together against the Rockies. And then they also played the Chicago Cubs earlier in the week. Manny Machado, he was having a great week up until he was injured. It looks like he sprained his ankle yesterday. So we'll see how long he ends up being out. It doesn't appear to be serious, but with sprained ankles, you just really never know. And he's been lights out for the Padres. Like, they've missed Tatis, but they really need Machado. Machado's been one of the hottest hitters in the league from the start. And so that's going to be a huge loss for them. Luke Voit, he actually had a really good week this week. And Joe Musgrove, man, this guy continues to dominate with the pitching. Right now, he leads the league with the lowest ERA with 1.59, and he also has 8 wins. And that's tied for the league lead with a whole bunch of other pitchers as well, stuck at 8 right now. But Joe Musgrove looking like a solid early Cy Young favorite at this point in the season. All right, and then a couple other things also happened in baseball this weekend. A couple rookies actually had some really big games, starting with the Miami Marlins rookie, Gerard Encarnacion. He came up to bat. His first hit of his entire career ended up being a grand slam, helping the Marlins actually beat the New York Mets 6-2. And that's actually the first time since 1901 that a rookie with his first hit hit a grand slam. So that was a big deal. Then also in Pittsburgh against my San Francisco Giants, unfortunately, rookie Jack Sawinski, he ended up having 3 home runs yesterday in one game. And his final home run ended up being the game winner. So he had a huge game for a rookie. And then also Mike Trout, a couple weeks ago, he was having a really bad couple of weeks where he went like 0 for 24, 0 for 26. It was something crazy like that. Very out of character for Mike Trout because he's always been one of the most consistent, solid hitters in baseball since his rookie season, basically. He's basically the hottest hitter in the league right now. He's back up to number one. He really didn't fall out of the top five even when he was in that 0 for 26 start or slump. But yesterday, he actually hit his 50th home run against the Seattle Mariners. That's second most against one team. Rafael Palmeiro actually has 52 against the Seattle Mariners. So Mike Trout will probably eventually pass that, I imagine, pretty soon, probably at some point this season. Since the Mariners are in the Angels division, I imagine Trout's going to have a couple more home runs against the Mariners this season. So that's it for pro baseball. Now let's move on to the College World Series and my disappointing-ass Texas Longhorns, man, they got their asses stomped in this one. You know, I had high hopes for them because I had them moving on to the national championship and actually winning it all just because they looked like they were playing great baseball. But, man, they just hit a brick wall. Starting off with the game one against Notre Dame. Man, Notre Dame just came out and kicked their ass, and they ended up losing 7-3, and it wasn't close at all. It wasn't even a good game. As a matter of fact, these last two games for the Longhorns were very disappointing. The pitching was the main reason why it was so disappointing. But also, you know, the offense really couldn't get going, and so it was very disappointing to see that showing from the Longhorns, but that's just what happens in these tournaments. So Texas ended up losing to Notre Dame 7-3. And then also in bracket one, the other matchup was Texas A&M versus Oklahoma. And Oklahoma ended up stomping them 13-8. So in the loser bracket, it ended up being Texas A&M versus Texas. And That's when Texas got their asses beat by, not only did they lose, and then not only did they get their asses beat, but they fucking got their asses beat by Texas A&M. And that's pretty much unacceptable if you're a Texas Longhorns fan. And they got stomped 10-2. Texas A&M just absolutely dominated them. And the winner's bracket was Oklahoma versus Notre Dame. And Oklahoma actually dominated Notre Dame. They ended up winning that game 6-2. So we'll see who's going to face Oklahoma next in the loser's bracket between Notre Dame versus Texas A&M. Then in bracket two, we had Stanford versus Arkansas, and Arkansas showed no mercy. They absolutely stomped Stanford to the curb, 17-2. Yeah, that's the score, 17-2 in a baseball game. Nuts. And then the other matchup was Auburn versus Ole Miss. Ole Miss ended up stomping Auburn to the curb. They beat them 5-1. So then the loser's bracket ended up being Stanford versus Auburn. I don't know who won that game. It looks like that game was on a couple hours ago. I wrote down all these results before that game. So that matchup, it's probably already happened. It looks like it says it was on at 1. So yeah, that matchup already happened. So not sure who moved on in that matchup. So that's what we've got so far. So really the only team who's moved on at this point is Oklahoma. They're just waiting on their next opponent from Notre Dame, Texas A&M. And then you got Arkansas and Ole Miss playing each other tonight. So we'll see who moves on in that bracket. And then Stanford versus Auburn, that's the loser's bracket in bracket two. And we'll see what happens there. So, very disappointing showing for my Texas Longhorns, but everybody else who ended up moving on and winning, they played great, and I really hope somebody steps it up and kicks the shit out of Oklahoma, because I really do not want to see the Sooners win a national championship in baseball. I don't want to see them win anytime ever, but right now that's what's going on, so I don't want to see them win a national championship in baseball. All right, and moving on to the UFC this weekend. I was actually here in Austin. They did an event out at the Moody Center. It's a new little venue here in town, and so a lot of events have been going on there lately. And so UFC came to town, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to go. Wish I could have gone, but it just didn't happen. And, but I mean, damn, Austin got a motherfucking show. You know, it wasn't a title, it wasn't for a belt or anything. But 8 out of the 13 fights ended in knockouts. Like, it was crazy. I think the first 3 or 4 fights, it was like knockout, knockout, knockout. And they were quick knockouts too. And it was nuts. But, pretty much every single fight was good. Even the ones that went to the judges, they still were really good, but it was just crazy to see that 8 out of the 13 fights, ended up being knockouts. And, it was a crazy, crazy night of UFC. Very fun to watch. Unfortunately, the main event, or one of the co-main event, between Cowboy Cerrone and, I can't remember the other guy's name, who ended up dropping out. But basically, the day of the fight, the other guy dropped out due to like a knee injury. So basically the co-main event did not happen, but it didn't matter because there were nothing but knockouts that night, and it was an excellent night of UFC fights. And that's actually what I really dig about the UFC is, you know, even if like that wasn't a pay-per-view night, as a matter of fact, with UFC, what I like about them though is they make UFC accessible for everybody. Even though they have the pay-per-view events, they still put the preliminaries on, and those are free for anybody. And real talk, the preliminaries are just as good as the pay-per-view events. And that's where I really think UFC's, where they really beat out boxing, because boxing's great as well. It's just that they didn't do what UFC did. UFC makes it more accessible. for just the casual fan or somebody who doesn't want to pay the pay-per-view. They could still watch the preliminaries and get some really good fights, and you get a shit ton of fights too. I mean, the preliminaries are usually like 5 or 6 fights, and then the pay-per-view are usually like 5 or 6 fights. But then you also have what went on this weekend is it wasn't a title fight, so even the main events were just on ESPN. So it's nice to that's what I really dig about the UFC is that they really make it accessible for a casual fan to really become a fan. And when usually preliminaries you don't think that those are going to be great fights, but damn, they really end up being great fights. And you even start seeing some fighters begin in the preliminaries, and then all of a sudden they become the pay-per-view event holders just because they work their way up. And so that's what I really like about the UFC is the preliminaries are just as awesome as the pay-per-view portion of it. But like I said, they make it accessible for everybody to watch. And I just love watching the UFC, and that was just a great weekend of knockouts and fights. And speaking of knockouts... The Colorado Avalanche are absolutely killing the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals. Game one, they kicked their asses 4-3, but then game two, they showed absolutely no mercy and stomped them to the curb 7-0. The Avalanche, I wouldn't be shocked if they end up sweeping the Lightning at this point. Now, I do have too much respect for the Lightning to say they're going to get swept. Man, the way the Avalanche are making this look, it's too easy. And the Lightning better step it up, tonight because, if they don't win game three, I'm pretty sure that, the Avalanche are going to end up sweeping this shit. So Lightning got to step that shit up. Speaking of good Texas Longhorn news, about a month ago, I was talking about, Arch Manning. He's the top recruit right now. He's, Peyton Manning's nephew. He's basically deciding what college he's going to be attending next year, and the Texas Longhorns are one of his last choices. It's either Longhorns, Alabama, or one other school I can't recall. Of course, my fingers are crossed for the Longhorns just because it's been a minute since we have had a good quarterback, and I mean a good quarterback, not some mediocre trash. Like, really, the last good quarterback we had was Colt McCoy, and then before him, it was Vince Young. And since then, we haven't had a good quarterback at all. We've had okay quarterbacks or guys who could get the job done, but we haven't had anybody who I've looked at and been like, that's the dude who's going to lead us to a national championship. And that's why I'm really hoping Arch Manning is coming our way. And we got some good news this weekend because one of his good friends, who's a teammate of his currently in high school, is a 3-star tight end recruit, Will Randall. He ended up committing to the Texas Longhorns this weekend. So that is a very, very good sign. If you're like me and you're hoping Arch Manning's going to be the savior of the Longhorns. So come on, Arch, we need you. Hook 'em horns, man. Austin, Texas, we need you. We got your boy Will Randall, so come on down. Austin's a great city. I think you would like it here. I think you'd look great in burnt orange, so get down here, dude. All right, and then we had, even though the NBA Finals, they are over, congratulations once again to the Golden State Warriors for winning yet another championship. They had their parade today. And it's actually kind of funny because a lot of teams that didn't do shit and players who didn't do shit this year are talking a lot of shit to the team that just won it all. So it's kind of funny to see that the Warriors just won. They are the dynasty and the team of this era. And you're talking shit to them after they just won? Good luck with that, y'all, next season. Good luck with that, y'all. But even though the season's over, the NBA draft is this Thursday. The Orlando Magic have the number one overall pick, and it's looking more and more like they're going to end up drafting the forward out of Auburn, Jabari Smith, which I think is a solid pick. There's also rumblings about Chet Holmgren. He's also another one of the top picks. And then you've got Paolo Banchero. Those are basically the top three picks that everybody's looking at, but it's looking like Smith is going to go number one overall, which I think is probably the best fit for Orlando. Chet Holmgren, to me, I don't know how I feel about him. He's a very solid player. He's got some great basketball skills, but he's a very skinny guy. And in basketball, that usually doesn't bode well, especially your rookie season. Now, I'm not saying you can't grow into your body. Obviously, many players have done that over the years, and obviously you build more skills and you start training in the weight room and doing more and more. So I'm not saying he can't develop into a great player, but just for some reason, there's something about Holmgren that I don't really see him as a top pick in the draft, but he is. Really, I kind of feel like this year's NBA draft is a little bit weak. There really aren't any huge standout players to me. Really, my favorite player is actually Banchero. I think he's the best player in this year's draft, but even he, I can't tell you that he's going to be the next like superstar to hit the league. So in this year's draft, I don't really see anybody who stands out, at least at this point. But the draft is Thursday night. And we'll see what happens. My crappy Lakers don't have a draft pick, at least so far. They don't this year. So, hooray. That fucking sucks. And speaking of my Lakers, I actually just heard an awful rumor today about a player they might be looking into signing next year, whether it be for trade or if he ends up getting released from his team or whatever. I don't know the details. All I know is when I heard this, I was like, this is not an idea I'm down with. I do not want this player on my team. And that would be point guard Kyrie Irving. Now, don't get me wrong. Kyrie Irving, he is a great talent. He is a good basketball player. But he is a twat. That dude is such a fucking drama queen. I have no interest in that dude. And he skips games over having his period, basically. Oh, I got cramps today. I can't play. And it's just like, and this is even before, because, you know, this past season, he missed like half of the season because he couldn't play in the majority of the home games for the Nets because he didn't get vaccinated. So there's that. But even last year, he was just taking off random games. And so it's like, I don't even know if this dude even wants to play basketball. Why the fuck would I want to see him on my team? I don't. He's way too much of a fucking diva and a twat in my for me to even want to see him on my motherfucking team. And it was funny because he had flashes of being a pretty good player this year, but I mean, you could argue that that's because he basically only played like once or twice a week. So he was pretty fucking fresh. If he's playing the entire season, which I don't think he'll do because he usually just bitches out and bitches and moans and doesn't even want to play basketball. But I have no interest in seeing Kyrie Irving in a Lakers uniform. It's definite possibility. I mean, I don't really think he's much of an improvement from Russell Westbrook because Russell Westbrook is also a twat. And he's too much of a liability. And I know we got to move on from him. But replacing him with Kyrie Irving, I don't think is a good idea. I hope that's just straight up rumor. I don't want to see it. Like I said, that dude's too much of a diva. And I don't think he's worth the time. And I really don't even... I actually do question whether he wants to play basketball or not. And I don't want that shit on my team. I want people who want to play basketball, who want to win, and who want to win championships. Kyrie Irving fits none of that mold. He's, like I said, good basketball player on the court when he actually plays, but for the most part, he's a motherfucking twat. Straight up. All right, and now I'm going to end today's show with a little bit of what I'm going to call Steph Curry versus LeBron James. And, you know, I brought it up in the last episode that I think now there is a legit conversation on who is the most dominant player of this era. Is it Steph Curry or is it LeBron James? Now, I know you LeBron fangirls, you can't get his dick out your mouth. And so I know a lot of y'all have already shut down. You can't believe I said it, but I mean, real talk, let's start off with the number one stat that I already discussed in the last episode, and that is, you know, their finals record. And that would be Steph Curry's finals record. He's been to 6 finals, and his record is 4-2. LeBron's been to 10 finals. Yes, that is impressive, but his record is 4-6, below .500. Now let's go a little bit deeper into those finals. They faced off against each other four times in the finals. And when I say they, I mean Steph Curry's team versus LeBron James' team. And in those four matchups, Steph Curry's team is 3-1 versus LeBron's team. So that statistic alone puts Steph above LeBron. Now, I know LeBron fangirls, you can't do it. You just can't stand anybody talking about somebody else being a great one in this era. But I'm sorry. You can now talk about Steph in the exact same category as LeBron. Now, when I talk about this, both players are great. They're two of the greatest players, not only in this era, but of all time. So they're both great, not taken away from either one of them. But I'm just here to point out that Steph Curry is now on the level of LeBron James. And I'm trying to make a case here as to who would you rather have leading your team? If you had them in their prime, just what they've done over their career. And both of them are very impressive. When I looked over their careers and their statistics compared to each other, I think Steph Curry's best year, what I would call his prime year, the greatest year, at least so far, that Steph has had, I think it would be the 2015 season when he won the MVP, and then Golden State also won their first championship in that year. And I'll go a little bit more in depth once I get to these, but that's where I think his best year was. Where LeBron, I think his best year was the 2012 season with the Miami Heat. And he also won MVP that year. And that was also when he won his first NBA Finals. So both of their best seasons, by far, they're very comparative too. Like, the thing about LeBron, he's an all-around player. He was the first pick overall by the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2003. There was hype surrounding LeBron, his junior year of high school. So he's always had the hype surrounding him, and he's lived up to the hype, which is great. He's an all-around player. One thing that I will definitely say that he has up over Steph, at least to this point, is defense. LeBron actually is one of the best defenders in the league, and he's been one of the best defenders since his fourth, fifth season in the league. Like, he's been a top defender. But Steph, on the other hand, has been an insane scorer, and he's changed the game. You can't even argue that he hasn't changed the game. He has 100% changed the game. Because all anybody cares about, like, when little kids are playing basketball, they want to be knocking down the same 3-point shots that Steph is knocking down. And, while yes, kids want to be LeBron too, they're not mimicking him the same way they're mimicking Steph. Steph has straight up changed the game. It used to be like, you know, we'd have Reggie Miller's in the game. He was a great 3-point shooter. And he was the top 3-point shooter ever in NBA history until Steph Curry. But Steph Curry, man, he changed the game. And when you look at their stats too, comparatively, both he and LeBron, they dominate. They both get triple doubles. They're both great with assists. They both score 50-point games, and they take over games. So they both have it in those areas. But like I said, the finals record for me personally, because I care about championships. I know we live in a day and age where we're not supposed to tear people down because they don't win. But I'm sorry, the whole point of sports is to be a winner. And when I look at your record and Steph's 4-2 and LeBron is 4-6, that says a lot to me. And yes, 10 finals is great, but hey, so is 6. You know, Steph went to 5 straight. And LeBron went to, 10 straight? Not 10 straight. He went to, like, 8 straight, 9 straight. He went to quite a few in a row. Another thing that I believe Steph has up over LeBron is he played in the Western Conference his entire career, at least so far, whereas LeBron was in the Eastern Conference the majority of the time. And the Eastern Conference was... at that time did not even compare to the Western Conference. The Western Conference has always been the cream of the crop, at least, these last couple of seasons since LeBron left the Eastern Conference, it's finally become competitive. But before then, it really wasn't that good. Whereas the Western Conference, throughout Steph's entire career, since the day he was drafted, by the way, he was drafted 7th overall by the Golden State Warriors in 2009, he has been in the Western Conference the whole time. And, you know, the Western Conference has dominated. You know, they've had to go up against teams like the Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder when they were the dominating team, and Houston. And whereas, LeBron, he did have to play teams like the Boston Celtics, who were really good, the Detroit Pistons, who were also really good. Overall, when you compare the conferences and the competition, the Western Conference, it's just head and shoulders above the Eastern Conference, at least in that time period, while LeBron was there. And yeah, he dominated it, but that's because it was the Eastern Conference. Notice he's not dominating the Western Conference. So there you go. Let's go ahead and just talk about they're both MVPs, league MVPs. They've both won finals MVPs. They've just had great careers so far overall. So let's break down their MVP seasons. Let's start with LeBron, because he started winning the MVPs basically before Steph Curry, and then Steph started winning them right after he stopped winning them. So they kind of not only have they faced off against each other in the finals a lot, but they both basically just alternate who wins the MVP. So in 2009 was when LeBron James won his first MVP, when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And actually, before I get into this MVP thing, another argument I wanted to make for Steph is that I like that he's been with the Golden State Warriors his entire career. He's never threatened a trade. He's never been a diva. He's never been like, oh, I'm too good for this. Oh, I want this player. I don't want that player. It's never been like that with Steph. Whereas with LeBron, he's always been a diva. I'm not saying he can't be a diva. He's a great player. And if teams want to ask him his opinion and have him be GM LeBron, good luck on you. But that doesn't usually work when LeBron is GM. Just saying. LeBron's played for multiple teams. He's played for the Cavaliers twice, the Miami Heat, and then now the Los Angeles Lakers. So he doesn't really have any loyalty, which doesn't matter to a lot of people, but to me it does. Like, one of the main reasons why I love Kobe Bryant is that he was a Laker for life. If Kobe was in any other uniform besides the Lakers, like, I don't know what I would have done. I would have, like, palpitations those couple of seasons where he threatened that he wanted to leave the Lakers. And, you know, you're sitting here thinking about him being in a Bulls uniform or a Clippers freaking uniform, for Christ's sake. That sent my heart into palpitations until he finally shut up about that shit. But it matters to me if you stay with the team for your whole career, especially kind of the way LeBron's gone about it. He's been a bitch about a lot of things. So that's another thing that, in my personal opinion, I put Steph up above him there. So now let's break down the MVP season. So LeBron won his first MVP in 2009. This season was basically like his breakout season. You know, his rookie season, since the day LeBron hit the league, dude has been that guy. They were calling him the next Jordan, and they knew he was going to be the next superstar to take over the league. But the 2009 season was when he really took over the league. He actually finished second for the Defensive Player of the Year, and he did make the first team NBA All Defense that year. So that was really like when he stepped it up defensively as one of the dominating defensive players. And in this season, he had 23 chase downs. So this kind of started him, sprinting down the court and just blocking your shot that you think is an easy layup. But so he had 23 chase downs, 93 blocks. And he led the team in all categories that season. The Cavaliers ended up losing the Eastern Conference Finals to the Orlando Magic in 6 games that year, which in my opinion is pathetic, because the Orlando Magic were not that good. And that just goes to show you how weak the Eastern Conference was, is that Orlando Magic team was the most dominating team in the Eastern Conference. So that's LeBron's first MVP year. Then his second MVP was the following season when he won in 2010. He was with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They ended up having the best record overall. In that year, he averaged 29.7 points per game, 7.3 rebounds, 8.6 assists, 1.6 steals, and one block per game. So, like, that's basically LeBron's stat line. Like, he's been very consistent with the stat line. It basically has been that stat line, give or take. Like, he might score, 30.1 points and 8 rebounds and 7 assists and 2 steals and 3 blocks the next season. It doesn't vary that much. He's very, very consistent in that manner, especially when it comes to just being an all-around player, scoring points, rebounds, and especially his assist game. He doesn't get a lot of credit for being the pure passer he is, but he's an amazing passer. In that season with the Cavaliers, he ended up losing in the second round to the Boston Celtics in 6 games. And actually in one of those games, I believe it was game 5, or it might have been game 6, the Cavaliers literally ended up having their worst playoff loss of all time. And it was one of LeBron's worst playoff performances by far. It was also his last game with the Cavaliers as well. So that's how that MVP season ended up. Then with the Miami Heat, he ended up winning MVP for the 2012 season. That year was a shortened year due to a player strike. And during that offseason, he ended up working with Hakeem Olajuwon in improving his post game, because that's where he really felt he needed to make the biggest impact. And it showed. That year, like I said, I think that's LeBron's best year by far. And the Heat actually started out that season 18-6. They ended up having, not only was his regular season amazing, but this was when he really took over in the playoffs. And he just went off and had some amazing games. I believe that was the year when they were playing the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. And he just took over. I believe it was game 6, where he just took over, went off for something like 48 points. And they moved on to the NBA Finals, in which they would beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in 5 games. And that was a big deal, because this Oklahoma City Thunder team had Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. So this was a really, really good Oklahoma City team. But the Miami Heat, they were that team that year, and LeBron was the reason why. And then his final MVP season was the following season with the Miami Heat, when he won the MVP in 2013. That season, the Heat got even better. They actually went on a 27-game winning streak that year. But also that year, LeBron ended up improving his shooting percentages, and he actually ended up getting a whole bunch of records that year for just shooting percentage and just random shooting records. So he was really on with the shooting that year. And that was also the year the Miami Heat went to the finals against the San Antonio Spurs and ended up winning in 7 games with the famous Ray Allen game-winning shot in game 6 to take them to a game 7. And eventually the Miami Heat would end up going on and winning. So those are LeBron's 4 MVP seasons, which are very impressive. 2 of them ended with finals. 2 of them did not. And he was definitely dominant those 2 years with the Heat. And he was dominant as well those years with the Cavaliers. But I really think when he went with the Heat, that was when he really became a whole different player. And that's when he became the player he is today, where he's just dominated in the post game. He's become a better shooter. And then defensively as well, he's just lights out. And then moving over to Steph Curry's MVPs. He won the MVP for the 2015 season, and that season he broke basically every 3-point record you possibly could own. The Golden State Warriors also, they had 67 wins that year. And then also in the postseason, he ended up breaking a whole bunch of 3-point records for postseason records as well. One game, he actually ended up having 6 threes and 6 steals, and he's the only player to ever do that. That year, they ended up going to the NBA Finals and beating the Cleveland Cavaliers in 6 games. Then he won MVP the following year, in 2016. And this was the year the Golden State Warriors, they broke the regular season record for wins with 73 wins. They were the most dominating team. This year, it's crazy. I couldn't even write down all the statistical categories that Steph Curry broke that year. I mean, he had, in the first 3 games, 118 points. At that point, the Warriors were on a tear. They ended up winning 24 games in a row, went 24-0 for a minute there. He was going off with triple doubles. He had a couple 50-point games, a bunch of 40-point games. He once again broke his own 3-point record for the single season. That season, he became the only unanimous MVP winner of all time. But unfortunately, that season, even though it was amazing for them, they ended up losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the finals in 7 games. Once the playoffs rolled around, he did get injured. I believe it was against Houston. He hurt his ankle, and so he ended up being out for a few games. And I think that's what really hindered the Golden State Warriors is his injuries. Then plus, of course, in the finals, Draymond Green, he'd hit LeBron in the balls, and he ended up getting suspended for that one game. And that's when the turning point happened, and the Cavaliers were able to come back from down 3-1, and they would come back, and they would win in 7 games. And so, unfortunately, Steph Curry's probably one of the best seasons he's ever had. He won MVP, but he did not walk away with the finals that season. So both of them, they've won MVPs, and then they've had great seasons, but then also fallen short, even though they've won those MVPs. So they both are great in that regard. Some of their notable teammates that they have. Now, a lot of people like to act like LeBron has not had any notable teammates. Well, when you look at the notable teammates, and when I say notable teammates, I mean like dudes who are actually like potentially Hall of Fame players or really game-changing players who make a difference on the team. Not the little role players, even though role players obviously play a great role with the team. I'm talking real legit players. And so with Steph, he's pretty much only had Klay Thompson, who is a great player, and Draymond Green, who's also a great player, but neither one of those dudes, when they were drafted, was expected to be as great as they are right now. And then the only, like, quote, great, great player Steph has played with is Kevin Durant. Of course, Kevin Durant had an amazing time with the Warriors, and he was unstoppable, but hey, Steph was as well. I'd also like to note his last teammate who's notable is also Andre Iguodala, who was huge at the beginning of this dynasty as well. But when you look at it, those are really the only notable teammates for Steph Curry. Whereas you look at the notable teammates for LeBron, he's had Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Kyrie Irving, Ray Allen, Anthony Davis, Rajon Rondo, and there's actually even more beyond that. But a lot of people like to act like he hasn't had any good teammates around him when he actually has. He said, I mean, his time with the Miami Heat, those teams were stacked, even beyond him, D-Wade, and Bosh. Like, they had some really great players. They had some good role players, and they had some defenders. You know, they even had freaking Gary Payton. I just left Gary Payton off of this list. How the fuck can I leave Gary Payton off that list? He's one of the greatest of all time, and he's played with LeBron. So that's what I mean, is, like, LeBron's played with some great players. He's had some help. Whereas, Steph has pretty much been the focal point of the Golden State Warriors since he was drafted. And like I said, Klay, Draymond, Iguodala, they've been huge role players for this team. But they don't touch Steph's level. Whereas, Wade, Bosh, Ray Allen, like I said, Gary Payton, those type of guys, they're Hall of Fame level players. And they were huge players. So to act like LeBron didn't have help along the way, he certainly did. I know a lot of people, they think of the Cavalier days. And the funny thing about the Cavaliers is they could have kept him for his entire career, but they just never wanted to spend money on anybody. And the few times they did, nobody wants to stay because it's Cleveland, for Christ's sake. And really, the only draw there is LeBron. I will say, though, that Steph definitely has a one-up on LeBron with the coaching department because, you know, Steph has basically had Steve Kerr his entire career. He did have Mark Jackson to start, but Steve Kerr, Hall of Fame, literally one of the best coaches of all time, and he hasn't even retired yet. So Steph definitely has that up on LeBron just because LeBron's really only notable coach he ever had was Eric Spoelstra when he was with the Miami Heat. And when he had Spoelstra, he was basically just beginning his career. You know, I think Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league for damn sure. He's kept the Heat in contention for the majority of the time he's been there. Even after LeBron left and even after D-Wade retired, like, he still makes the Heat a legit team. So I'm not saying that Spoelstra is not a good coach. He actually is the best coach LeBron has had. But at the time, he was just starting out. We didn't know what the hell to expect from Spo. But he's really the only notable coach LeBron has had. Other than that, LeBron's had very mediocre coaches along the way. As a matter of fact, it's always been the joke that LeBron's the coach and the coach is not the coach. So, definitely Steph benefits from having Kerr, whereas LeBron basically only had Spoelstra his career. But, you know, as far as, like, records go, Steph's basically going to own every single three-point record. He already owns the majority, if not all, of the three-point records. And he still has plenty of time to go, meaning he's going to extend those records out so that so many of them last for years on end because they're going to be so difficult for anybody else to catch up to him. So definitely Steph is going to walk out of this game owning basically every three-point record. And LeBron also owns a ton of records as well. I mean, he is the all-time assist leader currently. And at some point, more than likely next season, unless some type of injury happens, LeBron's going to pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. And so that's definitely a huge accomplishment for him as well. So both of these guys are going to be walking away with great records that that matter to the game. And they're a big deal and they're great to have on your resume as well. But where I would definitely take Steph over LeBron is when we're talking about the postseason. And when you actually compare the two of their postseasons, LeBron actually has quite a few games where he bitches out. Like, it'll be game six against, in the second round, against the Boston Celtics, when he had that worst playoff loss of all time for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He had, like, a horrible-ass game, and then he just ended up, like, walking off the court all sulking and shit, and acting like a little bitch. Whereas, for the most part, Steph has actually shined in the postseason. You can really only find like 2, 3, maybe 4 games where Steph hasn't been the man. And if he has a bad game, it's usually due to injury. Whereas LeBron, that is not the case. If LeBron's not feeling the game, that dude will bitch out and he gets upset at his teammates real easily. And so I would definitely take Steph in his postseason over LeBron in his postseason because Steph has shined way more times than LeBron has in the postseason. And then let's just compare their finals. You know, like I said, Steph's been to 6, starting with the 2015 season, Golden State Warriors. They were the number 1 overall seed that year. The two other good teams that year in the Western Conference were the Houston Rockets and the LA Clippers. And that season, they ended up beating the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals, and they won that series 4-2. Then in the 2016 season, Golden State were once again the number 1 overall seed. The other notable top teams in the Western Conference were the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. This Spurs team had Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili. This was a good-ass team. This was when the Spurs were one of the most dominating teams in the league. Also, Oklahoma City, this had Kevin Durant. This was before Kevin Durant ended up going to the Warriors the season before. And this season was actually the season when the Golden State Warriors would lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the finals 4-3. Then the following season in 2017, the Golden State Warriors were once again the number one overall seed. The other notable solid teams in the Western Conference were, once again, the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. That Houston Rockets team, this is when Chris Paul, James Harden, and the Warriors would end up beating the Cleveland Cavaliers 4-1 in the NBA Finals. Then the following season, 2018 season, Golden State were the number two seed in the Western Conference. And that season, the Houston Rockets were the number one seed. And then the Portland Trail Blazers were also another good seed out in the Western Conference. But the that was the year that the Golden State Warriors actually, I think they pretty much only lost, what, one or two games in that postseason run. I know they ended up... Or that might have been the season before. Yeah, that might have been the season before. Regardless, they beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. They swept them 4-0. So that was another great year by them. Then in 2019, when the Golden State was the number one overall seed, Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trail Blazers were the other notable Western Conference teams. But this was the year that the Warriors lost to the Toronto Raptors 4-2. Injuries definitely played a huge role in that as well. You know, Kevin Durant, he tore his Achilles. Klay Thompson also got hurt as well. It was a crazy series. That was the year Kawhi Leonard was with the Toronto Raptors. But so that was the 2019 season. And then this year, of course, the Golden State Warriors were the number three overall seed. Ahead of them, the number one seed was the Phoenix Suns. Memphis Grizzlies were number two. And they ended up beating the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals 4-2. So, I mean, you look at that and the sheer utter dominance that they've had. I mean, they've swept LeBron one time. Another year, they only got one win. And so, like, pretty much they just dominate in these NBA Finals that they win, especially. And then the NBA Finals that LeBron has played, starting with his first one in 2007, Cleveland Cavaliers were the number two overall seed behind the Detroit Pistons, who were the number one overall seed, and they were really the only good team in the Eastern Conference that year, besides the Cavaliers. And really, even that Cavaliers team wasn't that good. They kind of backed their way into the playoffs, and it was into the finals. It was very shocking that they ended up going to the finals, but they did lose to the San Antonio Spurs and got swept out 4-0. Then in 2010, with Miami, they were the number two seed. Chicago Bulls were the number one seed that year, and then the Boston Celtics were also another good team out in the Eastern Conference. That season, they ended up losing to the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals, 4-2. Then in 2011, Miami was the number two overall seed. The Chicago Bulls were the number one seed. The Indiana Pacers were another good team that year. But they did beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals NBA Finals 4-1. Then 2012, Miami was the number one overall seed. The New York Knicks were good that year. Also, the Indiana Pacers were another good Eastern Conference team. That year, they beat the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA Finals 4-3. Then the following season, Miami was the number two overall seed. The Indianapolis Pacers were the number one seed that year, and then the Toronto Raptors were good that year as well in the Eastern Conference. But that year, they lost to the San Antonio Spurs 4-1. So they didn't even play well, and that was a really solid team also. Then now this is back to Cleveland times, 2014. Cleveland is the number two overall seed. Atlanta was the number one seed that year, and then the Chicago Bulls were actually pretty good that year too. And that's when they lost to the Golden State Warriors in the finals 4-2. Then in 2015, Cleveland was the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference with the Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat playing some good basketball in the Eastern Conference. And that was the year they beat the Golden State Warriors 4-3 in the NBA Finals. Then the next year, Cleveland was the number two overall seed. And Boston was the number one overall seed that year. And the Toronto Raptors were another good Eastern Conference team. And then they would ultimately lose to the Golden State Warriors 4-1 that year in the NBA Finals. Then in 2017, Cleveland was the number four seed, so they weren't even good at all that year. And Toronto was the number one, Boston was the number two seed, and Philadelphia 76ers were the number three seed, and they would ultimately lose to the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. They would get swept 4-0. And then finally, LeBron's last NBA Finals, the 2020 season, when COVID hit and in the bubble, the Lakers were the number one overall seed. Also that year, the Clippers and the Denver Nuggets were pretty good. They would end up beating the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals 4-2. So when I look at their NBA Finals, yes, LeBron has been to way more than Steph. But LeBron's also been in the league a few more years than Steph. You know, LeBron was drafted in 03, whereas Steph was drafted in 09. So he's got a few more years up on him. So, but I mean, when you compare them, LeBron's been swept. LeBron's had, and he's been swept twice. He's had bad games in the playoffs where he hasn't shown up. You know, that NBA Finals when he was with the Miami Heat and they lost to the Dallas Mavericks, he got panned because he didn't play well at all. Whereas when you look at the Golden State Warriors, Steph's stepped it up every single time, and they've never been swept. As a matter of fact, they've been the ones doing the sweeping, and they've had record-winning seasons. And like I said, he's been in the Western Conference the entire time. So in my personal opinion, I think Steph Curry is the most dominating player of this time. If I were to start a team and I had to pick both of them in their prime, if I had to choose between Steph or LeBron, I'm taking Steph. Just because his three-point game is something different. He has changed the game in a completely different fashion. And like I said, I know LeBron fangirls don't like that. I mean, full disclosure, I'm not a LeBron fan. Yes, I'm a huge Los Angeles Lakers fan, but in my personal opinion, he don't carry Kobe Bryant's jock. He ain't shit to me. You know, Kobe is everything, and LeBron can't even fucking compare to Kobe. I've never rooted for LeBron. Now, I don't have any ill will towards him, of course. I respect him as a player. I respect him as a businessman, and I respect everything he's done for the NBA. I don't question whether he wants to win championships or not. Like with Kyrie, I absolutely question whether or not that dude even likes basketball, but no, I don't question that about LeBron. It's just me personally. I think too many people have been hyped up over LeBron and can't like look past him. And they always got to make excuses about his finals record. And they always like to say shit like, oh, he didn't have anybody on his teams and this, that, and the other. And it's like, well, he actually had a lot more notable teammates than Steph Curry has so far. And both these guys, like I said, great players. But me personally, I'm taking Steph over LeBron. And I think I just made some pretty decent arguments. Like I said, I even left out some shit because I couldn't write all this shit down. But I mean, between the two of them, like looking at some of the great playoff games they had. But when you really compare it, I'm going to take Steph over LeBron any day of the week. I think he's the better player. And I think he's changed the game in a way that that nobody has in ever. I mean, really, ever. So, like I said, both great players, but I'm taking Steph over LeBron. And those are my arguments as to why Steph, I think, is the greatest player of this generation over LeBron James. I know, LeBron fangirls, that's really difficult for you to accept that somebody just did that. But, I mean, you can turn to your LeBron James poster and start making out with it for all I fucking care. I know that's what you're going to do. I know that's what y'all are going to do. So yeah, that's today's episode. Enjoy the rest of the week of sports. Like I said, I'm dropping a new music video here. Promo video drops tomorrow. The music video from Victim Culture drops next Tuesday. Of course, I will shoot you a reminder about that during next week's episode. But like I said, enjoy the week of sports. We got a ton of baseball on tap, pro baseball, College World Series will continue to go on the rest of the week. Hopefully somebody beats those goddamn Oklahoma Sooners, because ain't no way do I want to see those motherfuckers win a goddamn thing. So enjoy the week of sports, y'all, and I will talk to you fools on Friday.